From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Oh, hey there, children of the night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob. Alongside of me, as always, is my ever wonderful, ever vampiric, ever cape wearing, forever the heartthrob of Bob After Dark, my friend, my producer, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count Panic.
Oh, hey, Bob. The show's off to a rousing
start. A rousing coughing start.
Well, we're doing great here. Another episode of Bob After Dark here in what is capping off?
Last show of January.
Yeah, sure.
Last show of January. Yeah. We only got, what, a month and a half left of winter at this point?
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, usually right around March is... You know, you get through February, which usually is pretty rough, and then early March you get through it, and then we're smooth sailing.
Smooth sailing. Nothing smooth bad sailing. Whatsoever.
Nothing bad could happen at all.
No.
So what's going on, Count? What's your weekend update?
Bob, the weekend was a good weekend. It was nice because there was no snow. There was no ice. That's what makes it so nice compared to the past couple weekends before that, but... All in all, a very pleasant winter weekend here in the Midwest, Bob, as we film.
Absolutely.
This show.
Yeah, the Midwest is strangely warm.
Well, now, currently, it's not bad, yeah.
No, I'm happy. Look, I'm content with this weather. This is happy Bob weather, know what I mean?
It's good weather.
It is good weather. Want to know about me?
What'd you do?
Guess who got sick? Again.
So I feel like this is a thing. You do a show, then you get sick, but then you do a show... so it's
okay. I'm
shows.
Not getting sick tomorrow. I don't care. Like, so you guys might have listened. Well, the episode just came out today in podcast form. Last week's episode. So I get to the studio, and it was my last day of being sick. And I'm like, man, you know, I left the studio Tuesday of the following week. I had walked into the studio with a cough, and then I Wednesday woke up feeling like garbage. Come to find out, I had pneumonia. I was stuck at home for a whole week because your immunity is shot at pneumonia. So then I'm back from good from pneumonia for, a week or two. And then I come back next week. And now I'm back Tuesday. Ha ha ha. Ready to go. I leave Tuesday. I go home Wednesday or Tuesday night and I start feeling like garbage. And then Wednesday rolls around and I feel even worse. And then I got that RSV thing that was going around, or COVID, whatever you want to call it. It wasn't COVID, but it was that RSV thing. And woo, I was spent from Wednesday until today. I was stuck at home because I can't leave. Your lungs, here's the thing, right? When your lungs get hit with a problem, you can't go out in cold weather because it makes it worse.
Yeah.
And, that's just the way the cookie crumbles, man.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know what, Bob? But it's not how many times you go down, it's how many times you get back up, they say.
Yeah, so I spent my weekend moping.
Moping.
Moping. Oh, my goodness, was I moping.
Lots of moping?
Moping. I was playing video games, which was nice. I worked on show stuff, which is really cool. I've been practicing my Twitch stuff. I'm not ready to officially move to the Bob After Dark world. I thought we'd be ready to go by now, but we're almost there. So the Bob After Dark Twitch will be launching soon. I've been streaming with the Windy City Ghostbusters, which has been a pretty cool experience. So that was me doing that. And now I'm back and ready to get moving. I'm going to be going to my next con in, I think, 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah?
I'll be at Washington, D.C. I'll be at KatsuCon.
At what con?
KatsuCon.
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 What's this con deal with?
It's an anime show, okay. Like always. I'm not speaking at KatsuCon. I'm hopefully, for all my Colorado fans, especially out in the Denver area, I'm going to be at Anime Colorado. Reach out to them. Let them know I submitted for a speaking panel. I'd like to speak there. It's cool to, I haven't had a panel in a hot minute. It'd be great to get back out there and do my thing. Know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if you guys are out at KatsuCon and you just want to say hi to me and say hello, I will be there all weekend with the Pawstar booth.
Really cool. Yeah. How about that?
Yes. So anyway, now that we're caught up to speed, welcome to Bob After Dark, the show. It's a paranormal show, weekly-ish paranormal show, where we talk about legends, lore, supernatural, things that go bump in the night, lights in the sky, weird cryptid stories, and of course, Count Panic's favorite snow cone flavor.
Oh, man. We'll go with cherry. Traditional cherry.
Cherry?
Like a traditional cherry drizzle, yeah.
Would you like to know mine?
Yeah.
Was that a hesitation? that seemed like a hesitation.
What, I'm going to, is it the blue one? The blueberry one? The blue one?
Grape. Grape, blueberry, and then coconut?
Coconut.
I think.
Underrated.
It is underrated. Or is that a shaved ice flavor? I don't know. Is there a difference between shaved ice and a snow cone when it boils down to it?
At the end of the day, I think it's the same thing, right?
I'm going to anger somebody. I'm going to anger some person is going to be like, it's not the same thing, Bob.
It's definitely not icy. Icy is something on a whole different level than your average snow cone.
Yes. So anyway, we split the show up if this is your first time watching, we split the show up into two parts. First part is the weird spooky news of the week. That's where you, the fans, and me, the Bob, go scouring the internet for the unusual news. Anything from just bizarre things, cryptid sightings, ghostly encounters, weird advances that borderline on science fiction. I present them to all of you to listen to. And then Count Panic gets to give us his hashtag Panic's Take. And that way there he gets to give us the full details on the news story.
Yeah.
No. And then the second part of the story is ripped right from the diaries of Dr. Ben Vanerson. Shout out to Dr. Ben Vanerson. It's his birthday today. Happy birthday, Dr. Ben Vanerson. We love you very much. Yeah. And then we dive into Lore of the Week. That's the meat and potatoes of the episode. Meat for you, potatoes for me, because you know I'm a vegetarian.
What else can we add to that?
What's that?
We need to add something else now.
Man could live on potatoes alone, all right? I do like some good potatoes.
How about meat and cheese?
I do like cheese. Meat, cheese, and potatoes?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. Anyway, so that's the core of the episode is the Lore of the Week, and we have some laughs around. I want to say hello to all of our fans that are chiming in on the Bob After Dark live Discord discussion, which is really cool. Speaking of Discord, Count Panic,
yeah,
why have you not joined yet? You got a link.
I know I have.
You got a link to start it. You have your own section on the forum dedicated to your fan base.
Wow, and I think I have an account, an old account, but it's not my name on.
Well, then figure it out.
My name?
I could change your name. Change your name to Count Panic on there, so it'll appear as Count Panic. And you have your own section for fans. You have fans literally posting in your section of the Discord,
all right,
and you're not even there to watch it.
I'm an old millennial.
I'm the same age as you. I think
is that like TikTok?
No, Discord's like it's a forum thing.
Forum.
It's a forum / instant messaging thing.
Like a MySpace.
No, MySpace was a social media experience. I guess you could say Discord's a social media experience, but it's more conversational.
Yeah.
If you guys want to get in on the conversations and chat live with us, you hop on over to the Bob After Dark page. I just posted a link to the Discord of the last post. So go on over to the live thing and get the Discord link. It's not as simple as just going to discord.com/BobAfterDark. You got to get the app and all that jazz. But get on over there. Do some chattings. It's going to be, it's a cool time. We got a lot of people in there saying hello and all that jazz. So get on over there.
Once again, if it's live and live time, they could also do what?
You can also call into the show, 219-845-1100. Last week, we had a record. Five calls.
Yeah.
And now listen, I know that sounds ridiculous, but I need you guys to know that while we're doing this live on the radio, most of my radio fans aren't the call-in type. And I know a lot of people listen to us on the radio because people, I recognize your voice. I love your show, blah, 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 blah. And they're big fans of the radio, but they never call in. And the podcast fans, they just listen whenever, and then they'll be like, oh, is Bob live on a Tuesday or not, But this is your opportunity, live fans. that are chatting right now, 219-845-1100. And for our podcast fans, you can call in on a Tuesday night after 9 p.m. as well.
There you go.
Do you want to say that number one more time?
219-845-1100.
Let's get 6 callers tonight. Tell your friends. Share the live. All right, you ready to dive into the weird, spooky news of the week, Count Panic?
Well, we could, but...
We have a caller right off the bat.
Right off the bat, we have a caller.
All right, let's just take it live. Caller, you're on the air.
Bob!
Hello, caller. Who are you?
My name is Neil.
Hi, Neil. Hey, it's Neil, Graveside Paranormal, Paranormal Guys.
What's going on, dude?
What's going on, Neil? How have you been?
I've been doing all right. I can't complain. I heard you give us a call, so I said, you know what? I'm going to call my buddy Bob.
Oh, Neil, we got to get you back on the show, man.
Anytime.
Yes, congratulate. I was going to say, everybody, if you get a chance, you got to go check out Graveside Paranormal and a Paranormal Guys, and we'll have Neil do his self-plugs. Neil is retired from his day job now after many years of community servant, I guess is the term, community employer, however you want to say it. Neil put in his time and effort to make sure that we're well, safe, and protected, and he is going to enjoy his retirement being spooky.
That's right. Exactly. That's what we're going to be doing.
So So tell us a little bit about Graveside Paranormal. Tell us a little bit about Paranormal Guys, and make sure that the fans know about that stuff.
Well, first off, I just want to say hello to both you and Panic.
Hey.
We're in the planning stages of the new tours that we're going to be doing this year, and we're hoping that you, Bob, are going to come out and be a tour guide again this year. Everybody had a great time when Bob from Bob After Dark came out and did the tour.
I'd love to again.
You did such a great job. And then a lot of people don't know is that you also did the Roth House.
Yes.
With Pete Chris. You did a great job there. We got some good Google reviews. You know, I reach out to people like yourself, Bob, who are very, very well informed about the paranormal, supernatural. And I know who has great personality, and that's you.
Oh, Neil, thank you very much. You're going to make me blush. Your check's in the mail, by the way.
No problem. Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about Graveside Paranormal Guys, in case the fans at home are brand new to your voice. You've been on the show before, but let's catch them up to speed.
So Graveside Paranormal is the parent company that we do all our tours off of. And, you know, if we ever redo like small little documentaries, that's the parent company, Paranormal Guys podcast. That falls under the umbrella. That comes out every other Wednesday after 12 o'clock on all your streaming outlets.
Oh,
so that always comes out. And we just did an episode with you, Bob. You were part of a panel with us the other day.
I did. It was such a really exciting time to be a part of that. It was, I don't want to spoil anything yet, but let's just say we debated evidence. And there was some amazing people on that panel. You had me, Neil Patrick from Ghostly Podcast, Jack from Paranormal Chicago, and a new gentleman that I've never had a chance to listen to speak. You want to talk a little bit about that? Big deal guest, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Sam Maranto, he is the director of MUFON in Illinois. I'm going to tell you something. Sam is a very, very great guy. He very knowledgeable. I mean, from the speaking that you heard from him talking when we were doing the podcast, he's very knowledgeable about anything that has to deal with aliens, any UFO sightings. People call out to him all the time when they see things. I actually sent him some evidence over the wintertime of some lady who sent me these what looks like to be lights in the sky, and I sent it to him, and he said he was eventually going to get back to me, but he'll listen to everybody. And like I said, he's a very knowledgeable guy, and he's been around for a long time. He actually saw Resurrection Mary once.
What a person. We gotta get him on the show, Count. He is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You gotta get him.
Yes.
He's man. Oh, he'll do your whole show for you.
I don't even need to talk. I'm just gonna give him 3 topic points and I'll just let him go. It's like when we had Bishop Long on here. I didn't have to say anything. That man held the entire interview and just was amazing. One of my better interviews I've ever had. What you as a podcast host know that. The little that you talk during a podcast, you know you're doing successful when you have a guest.
You're absolutely right. You know, if they can all of a sudden you could just start it off by asking the questions and they dictate for the rest of the show, man, I could just sit back.
That's called I don't have to talk. It's I don't have to worry about my voice cracking or coughing. I just let them deal with it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for calling in, Neil. We appreciate it. Folks, paranormal guys, can you it sounds like paranormal, but it's not a paranormal. Can you spell it out for our fans, Neil?
The play on words is the and then pair, P-A-I-R, and then there's a little dash and then A and then dash and then normal guys. It's just a pair of normal guys who are always talking about anything from aliens to cryptids to supernatural to the paranormal. You ask about it, we talk about it.
That's great. And folks, check out Neil's podcast. Thank you so much for calling in, Neil. We appreciate you.
Thanks, Bob.
All right. Have a good one. We have another caller.
Thank you, Neil.
Thank you, Neil. You know what, all right, take a life.
Keep it going.
Caller, you're on the air.
Hello, Bob. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Who is this?
This is John, not the John that you're used to talking to.
Oh, not? Jeez. Oh, wow. John beat John to the call. John, where are you calling from?
Wisconsin.
Oh, we're really big in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Are you going to? I'm going to be at, what part of Wisconsin are you at?
Southern. So, a little town called Union Grove.
I'm familiar, actually. I am familiar with Union Grove. I'll be at Anime Milwaukee. I'm not speaking this year, though. So if you catch me around, you could say hello if you're going to be there.
I was actually going to ask you if you were going to be on the Wisconsin Comic Convention in November.
We were there before, didn't we? Panic?
Yes,
we were there
that's
before.
That's where I met you.
Yeah, that's it. That was a long time ago.
A few years ago.
That was pre-COVID.
Pre-COVID, wow.
Yeah, we spoke back-to-back nights.
Yeah, I think I saw you on the last night, and it was funny because I was just about to leave, and something told me to stay, and I was like, I called my wife, and I'm like, I'm going to stick around and see what else is there, and then I just kind of wandered into your live panel, and I'm like, I'm so glad I did. It was amazing.
I appreciate that's called a long-term fan, folks. Long-term. This guy has stuck around because I think... Was that 2019, John, or 2000? It had to have been 2017.
2019, yep.
Yeah, that's a long time ago at this point.
Yeah, Ray Park was there, the guy who plays Darth Maul, so that was pretty cool. I got to take a picture with him. It was a good time.
Well, we met that guy from Sons of Anarchy. They were like, what's Count Panic? Remember we wore their Count Panic shirts?
Yeah.
We told them what it was. It was a cool time. So what's on your mind tonight, John, from Wisconsin?
Yes. Not much. I just wanted to call and say that I'm a big fan. I listen to you. You know, whenever I see a new episode out, I'm like, man, I got to check that out right away.
Well, John, that means a lot to us. Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I finally did get to go to Mars Cheese Castle. I live in Wisconsin, lived here since second grade, and I'm in my 30s. And I finally went to the Mars Cheese Castle, and immediately I thought of you, Panic.
It's a magical place.
They need to spot. We're sending people there at this point. They need to sponsor the show.
There's a bar in there. You could sit, have some cheese and crackers and drink, and then you go shop for your cheese.
Ice cream, too.
Yes.
You can go around and sample all kinds of cheese. It's a good time.
Absolutely.
It beats Disney World by a mile.
They need an amusement park then, you know?
A coaster.
A Ferris wheel of cheese bricks.
Oh, that's pretty. The cluster right there.
I'll pitch it to him. John, thank you so much for calling in. We appreciate you.
Yeah, no problem, Bob.
All right, man. Enjoy the show. All right.
Thank you. Have a good one.
John.
All right.
How about that? That's long-term story time.
That's actually, I'm impressed. Pretty cool.
The Cheese Castle really does have to sponsor this show.
At this point, I think they owe me a sponsorship.
Isn't that amazing, though? We live in a world where there's a Cheese Castle.
Yes. And they don't then they don't sponsor the show.
And we're not far from it.
No, we're, an hour? I'll get there?
No.
I get there in an hour.
Yeah.
Exactly.
This is a prime area to be in.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. By the way, folks, we are on caller number 2. We need... 3 more.
Well, we're about to do number 3.
We got 3. Caller number 3, you're on the air.
Hey, what the heck's going on there tonight, Bob? 2 callers before the regular John.
I was wondering, and we had a John before right you, John.
Yeah, I mean, I'm stunned. I mean, that's great. You're showering you with all kind of praises and accolades. And
I haven't even started the show yet.
At least it's John from Wisconsin. He must be a regular listener because he said he's not the regular John that calls. So I kind of feel good about this too, Bob.
Well, look, man, you're as much a part of the show as me or my numbskull producer over there. You're a legacy, man.
Then this John mentions the Cheese Castle and everything, and I'm kind of thinking of getting a bus now and maybe, you know, having a Bob After Dark trip to the cheese castle. Yeah. I'll probably chip in half of, for the bus. Wow. Well, I'm kind of fired up. Everybody's calling now, you know.
Well, John, look, you make that happen. I will do an entire ghost tour up to 94. I will talk the entire time. We'll get beers on that bus.
Oh,
we'll
have man, cheese. How much can I take?
Make that happen, let's talk about that in the future, John. I think that's a clever idea.
Definitely, definitely, Bob. But hey, I'm going to keep listening. Hopefully some more calls are going to be calling.
We need three more to go. We need three more for a record. Thank you so much for calling in, John.
See you, Bob.
Have a good one. All right, you ready for news stories?
Well, we can wait for three more callers. I don't know.
No, we're good now, right? The phone lines
we're
are clear
for now.
All right, folks, you can still call. You still call in 219-845-1100. All right, you ready?
Ready.
Okay, so our first news story today comes to us from Eerie News, and not eerie as in eerie spooky. I think this means eerie as in like Lake Erie.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
I literally picked this so this article popped up on multiple websites, right? But I had to pick the one that came from Eerie News.
That makes sense.
Because Eerie News, spooky news. Ah, they should sponsor me, right? I could be sponsored by a great lake. All right, so astronomers discover a strange new type of star hidden in the center of our galaxy. This was written by Philip Lucas of the University of Hertfordshire, by Ashley Strickland, CNN. A decade-long survey of night sky has revealed a mysterious new type of star astronomers are referring to as an old smoker. These previously hidden stellar objects are aging giant stars located near the heart of the Milky Way galaxy. The stars are inactive for decades and fade until they're almost invisible before belching out clouds of smoke and dust, and astronomers think they could play a role in distributing elements across the universe. Four studies detailing observations were published on January 25th, which was just a couple days ago, and in the monthly notices of Royal Astronomical Society. Astronomers observed the old smoker stars for the first time during the survey that involved monitoring nearly a billion stars in infrared light, which is invisible to the naked eye. The observations were carried out with the visible and infrared survey telescopes situated at a vantage point high in the Chilean Andes at the Cerro Panal Observatory. The team's initial goal was searching for newborn stars, which are very hard to detect invisible light because they are obscured by dust and gas in the Milky Way. But infrared light can pierce through this galaxy's high concentrations of dust to pick out otherwise hidden or faint objects. While two-thirds of the stars were easily able to be classified, the remainder were much more difficult, so the team used the European Southern Observatory's very large telescope to study individual stars, said Philip Lucas, professor of astrophysics at the University of Hertfordshire. Lucas was the lead author of one study and a co-author of three more. Hashtag panics take new discoveries in our own galaxy still happening in 2024.
Well, that's the thing. The galaxy is so, how big is the galaxy, Bob? Do we have a measurement on it?
That is not my job. Okay. That sounds like our friends over at the Challenger Learning Center.
I mean, the galaxy's got to be,
it's massive. It's bigger. It's bigger than, your love for cheese.
Bigger than, I don't know if nothing's bigger than that, but you know, the fact of the matter is we're still going to be finding out things to discover every year, right? There's nothing we can't run out of discovering, right? I mean, it's endless. The galaxy, the universe, it's endless, basically. So I guess I'm not too shocked, Bob.
Yes. Yeah. We that's really cool, man. I think it's interesting that we're still discovering things. And when I say in our own neck of the woods, I mean that in like light year terms, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's still, because the universe is infinite, right?
Yeah.
It's a common knowledge thing. It's an infinite space. So in the Milky Way, that's in our neighborhood. And you would think that in the very least, in our neighborhood, we'd have everything figured out already. We know where everything's at. Everything's pinpointed, ready to go. But yet we're still discovering new things just in our cosmic backyard.
Just like that.
I think that's cool. Maybe. All right, let's move on to something a little bit more spooky. And you actually have photos to show us. Yeah. I'll give you the holler when I put them up.
Okay.
Paranormal find unearthed by plumber during bathroom digging. This is actually published by the Brooklyn Paranormal Society, which I think is really cool. They have a ton of really fun articles and stuff like that, news. And I've just discovered them when I was doing research for this. Gave Tim Banal a break. I might be robbing these people of their news stories next. I joke, of course. So the one I was saying, the paranormal find unearthed by plumber during a bathroom digging. And there's lots of photos. We'll be showing that here shortly. A UK plumber, Jonathan Betts, made a surprising discovery while working on a 200-year-old cottage. He found over 20 bones hidden beneath the bathroom floorboards and shared the eerie find on TikTok. Initially concerned, Betts later determined that these bones were from a pig, not a human, and they were believed to have been buried to ward off bad spirits. The mystery was solved and the bones were returned to the ground. Betts' TikTok video gained 1.4 million views and sparked various reactions from the viewers. While carrying out routine plumbing work in centuries-old cottage, Jonathan Betts stumbled upon the mysterious find that sent shivers down his spine. As he was digging, as I was saying, found those things and historical significance. We, you know, our ancestors were very spiritual people, more than we are now, and they were all about the concept of, warding off evil, and so they were burying pig bones to do that. However, that's a really interesting, it's a really interesting bone to pick to bury there. I've heard of other ones, but I've never heard of that one in particular. And it's interesting because not only have this things like this happen all the time, but apparently somebody found bones buried underneath the Winchester Mystery House, which we'll cover at some point, the Tower of London, and various other locations. So other places around the world were burying bones to ward off evil spirits, not just bones for a burial ground. Hashtag panics take.
Yeah, Bob, and I'm going to flash some of these photos on the screen.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Let's show
the Jed TV.
Yeah, if you guys are watching live, you can see those bones.
So you can see those bones right there.
That is so cool, isn't it?
Yeah, and how long do we think? I mean,
that's a 200-year-old cottage.
Look at that.
There's teeth still intact.
And we don't know for sure what this is, Bob, correct?
Well, it's pig. They found out it was pig bones.
Oh, okay. They confirmed that?
Yes. Sounds like they confirmed it from the news article, at least. But what a find. You're just digging up, you're a plumber working on a, very old cottage, and that's a lot of bones.
Yeah, that's they didn't even realize they were going to be doing some archaeology.
No, and you could say that the dude faked it, but those don't look like, freshly got, pig bones. Those look like they've been sitting in the earth for a hot minute.
Yeah.
But
don't you wish you were out there when you dig around and you find some old
bones? I am not even lucky enough to ever find an arrowhead, man. I've never been lucky in any kind of digging. I remember when I was a kid, I guess I was digging a hole at a beach to try to find Bernie, if you catch that joke. Bernie from Weekend at Bernie's.
Yeah.
Anyway, my mom laughed at home, but you get the idea. I think that's so cool. And the fact that it was put there for spiritual reasons, I think, is even more fascinating because it shows history, right? But it also shows how much we've come from that, because back then everything was a spiritual belief, right?
Yeah.
Now I don't see a lot of people burying pig bones in their house to ward off evil spirits. I know plenty of the witchy type do, and that's fine. It's still a cultural thing, and that's still a religious aspect, a spiritual aspect, which I think is very good. Get what I'm saying?
I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
But it's interesting because this sounds like it was just a standard home that did that. And, finding it at the Winchester Mystery House, Tower of London, that's a really cool thing.
Just like that, yeah.
Yeah. What do you think?
I think it's interesting, Bob. Again, it's one of those cases where basically he was just digging up the bathroom there and bones. Of all things. I mean, it goes to show you. What do you think is underneath your bathroom there? I mean, we don't know.
Bottom floor of my house, because I live in a duplex.
Yeah, but there could be bones. What's underneath the... we'll figure it out.
Pipes. There's nothing interesting going on where I live, man. It was built over a swamp.
Oh, well, that's still fascinating.
All right, you ready to move on to the last news story of the night?
Sure.
All right, so our last news story comes to us from Paranormality Magazine.
Okay.
This is written by Brandon Grimes, and it's saying that research claims that half of Bigfoot sightings are black bears out walking on its hind legs.
Okay.
All right. You ready?
Yeah.
A new study finds surprising correlation between reports of Bigfoot sightings and black bear populations across North America. Researcher Flo Foxon expanded on previous work showing links between bear numbers and alleged Sasquatch sightings in the Pacific Northwest. Analyzing data from 2006, Foxon found a robust connection. For every additional 1,000 black bears in a region, Bigfoot sightings increased about 4%. This suggests many sightings are likely just cases of misidentified black bears. Bears stand upright and have varying fur colors, making them very plausible candidates for Bigfoot confusion. The analysis accounted for the forest cover and human population as the as other possible factors, but the bear population link remains strong. However, some gaps exist. States without breeding bear populations still report occasional Bigfoot sightings, indicating hoaxes or other wildlife misidentifications may play a role as well. Nonetheless, Foxon concludes a significant portion of Bigfoot reports are people simply mistaking the large ursine mammal for a giant bipedal primate. He suggests Bigfoot tallies could serve to independently track bear conservation trends. So the next time you think you've spotted a Bigfoot, you may want to double check. It could be someone's furry friend heading home for hibernation. That was my Yogi
Bear. Your
bear? That was my Yogi Bear impression.
Hey,
boo boo. Hey, Calpetic.
Not bad.
How about a picnic basket?
That's very good. You'd be a voice actor, Bob.
I'm something.
Yeah.
All right. So hashtag panic stick.
Well, you know, Bob, with this Bigfoot sightings take place all over, right?
Yes.
They say. But in a sense, if you're looking from a far-off angle in a far-off area, it could very well just be a black bear standing on its hind legs there walking through the forest. So I believe it. I mean, there's some weird bears out there, Bob.
Yes. Bears are interesting creatures. If you think that bears are going to sit on all four paws at all times, no, bears can get bipedal. Hmm. I mean, they're not going to be walking outright like something, you know, like we are. It's not a bipedal creature, but they can get on their hind legs and support themselves for the most part. That's why you're not supposed to climb a tree during a bear attack.
Yeah.
Because they can climb that tree.
Well, what's the whole... Yeah, that's...
I think, or different types of bears. I don't know, man. I can tell you that there's people... I'm going to crack a joke real quick and say that there's people probably listening to this episode being like, Bob's covering a bears episode, because once upon a time ago, I once made a comment saying there's no bears in China, but that's a story for another day. I know that the different kinds of bears can do different things, and I'm not a bear expert.
No.
You might look at me and be like, that guy's a bear scientist. I'm not. I am definitely not a bear scientist.
You don't claim to be a bear scientist.
I don't, but maybe I come across as that type of person.
Yeah, why?
But so, go on.
But I was going to say, like, the bear thing, it's if you come across one, they just say, act big, right?
I don't know, man. I'm not a... Look, if there's one thing I don't want to mess with, it's a bear where one swipe of their paw could really mess me up.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
No, that would be bad. Yeah. All right, so you ready to take a quick break?
Sure.
All right, Panic, and all of our viewers at home, stick around for the live audience. You're just going to hear some silence for a bit. And for our podcast fans, stick around because you're about to be hearing words from a podcast that you should be listening to. Stay tuned.
This is Mike.
This is Jacob.
And this is Matt.
We are Moth Boys,
a podcast on cryptids, conspiracies, and the unknown.
Unknown.
You can catch us every other Monday on, actually, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Thank you.
And we're back.
Bob, that was quick.
It was a long break.
Oh, yeah. I guess
that was a very long break.
That was a long break.
That was a long break. Yeah. What did you do during our commercial break?
Bob, during the commercial break, I stopped to the Cheese Castle.
You went to the Cheese Castle?
Yeah.
They're open at 9:30 at night Central Time?
Well, when you call and ask them politely, they'll open the doors.
It's the Count Panic special.
Yeah, at night. They have to make it work for me, but... Bob, you wouldn't believe I took a little bit of everything. I got all the cheese in the whole building. So.
Did you enjoy it?
I did.
What kind of cheese did you have?
All the Gouda cheese.
Gouda. Was the Gouda good? But it's...
Yes, it was good. I think this was one of the questions you asked me a few weeks ago, favorite cheese
I did.
We gotta go through like a whole system ranking our favorite cheese.
A paranormal cheese episode.
Yeah.
Haunted cheesery? Is that a thing? Haunted cheesery? That's...
Is the Mars Cheese Castle haunted?
Look, man. Yeah, that bus trip is exactly what I wanted. John, I hope you're still listening. I hope you're not joking, because I want to do a bus trip to the Mars Cheese Castle.
There
though,
you go.
I swear. All right, so...
What do you do?
What did I do during break? You know, Count Panic, I'm a man of many many hobbies. You know,
you are.
You know, I enjoy doing the different things. I like to experience different things. And would you like to know what I got a chance to do?
What'd you get a chance to do?
I got a chance to pick up competitive hopscotch.
Competitive hopscotch.
Yes, and I'm ranked number one NA in hopscotch, and I'll be going to the Hopscotch World Championships.
Well, congratulations, Bob. I didn't know there was such a thing.
Yeah, I didn't know I was able to jump that well.
Well, the things you learn later in life. Is there really a thing out there, I wonder?
What did I tell you I just did during break? What do you think I just told you I was doing during break?
I know. Well, congratulations, Bob.
Oh, thank you.
Hopefully, you take home the big enchilada.
The big enchilada.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. Ready to dive into the lore of the week?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Did you know that there's a country above America, Count?
I've heard about it.
It's called Canada.
Canada.
Yes. And in Canada, there is a place called Toronto.
Toronto.
And what if I told you that Toronto has a sewer system?
I would say crazy.
I don't know where I was going with that joke. I was hoping you were going to build off of me, and it just fell flat.
Well, I didn't know they had a sewer system.
They have a sewer system. What are you saying? Canadians don't have running water?
No, I just thought they did.
Or indoor plumbing?
Yeah. Well, it just kind of comes down here. Because we're below it.
Oh, my goodness.
It makes sense when you think about it.
All right. Okay, so...
Does it?
Yes, that's what I'm trying to get.
I mean, it would come down here to us.
You broke me, man.
There you go. Is that the end of the show?
Yeah. Good night, everyone.
Go to Canada.
Yeah, that's our paranormal story. Canada exists.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, in the city of Toronto, there is a sewer system, and inside the sewer system, there exists a monster. Known as the Toronto Tunnel Monster. And that's what we're going to be talking about.
Wow,
this
really?
Evening. The Toronto Tunnel Monster. The TTM, as I'm going to dub it
okay,
right now. The
yeah.
TTM, the Toronto Tunnel Monster. Are you ready?
Yeah.
All right. It's also known as the Cabbage Town Tunnel Monster.
I like that name, too.
I don't know why. You would think I would have looked up why Toronto's called Cabbage Town.
Yeah.
I didn't do that. I wanted to leave it a mystery for everybody.
Yeah.
All right, you ready?
Sure.
So, according to the Cryptid Wiki, which is a great source for spooky stuff, the city of Toronto once had numerous streets and waterways that, as the city expanded, were built over and became a network of underground waterways, buried beneath the city and merging with newer sewer systems. The Algonquin tribes of Canada spoke of a man-like hairy creature that thrived in the rivers before they were hidden away from the public. In 1978, a similar monkey-like creature was sighted living in an underground tunnel in Toronto. The Mamegwesi. Say it with me. The Mamegwesi, sometimes known as the Mamegwashi, are small water spirits usually said to inhabit rivers or riverbanks in Algonquin mythology. The name is pronounced again, Mamegwesi. The Mamegwesi are small riverbank dwelling water spirits. They are generally benign creatures, but sometimes blow canoes astray or steal things that were not properly, if they're not shown proper respect. In some Ojibwe traditions, the Mamegwesi can also be seen by, can only be seen by children and medicine people. In others, they can appear to anyone, and they may be able to help humans find tobacco and other gifts. Most often, the Mamegwesi are described as being child-sized and hairy with a large head and a strange voice that often sounds like the whine of a dragonfly. The Korean Innu describe them as having narrow faces, and some Menomi storytellers said that they have no noses. It is sometimes said that the Memegwesi were originally created from the bark of trees, and they are said to have carved symbols on rocks and sometimes carved small canoes for themselves out of stone. Some people believe that their name comes from the Ojibwe word for hairy or Memmi. Since the Memegwesi are usually described as having hairy faces and bodies, other people believe that their name is related to the word for butterfly, Memegwana. When Toronto buried many of its river systems, luring them into underground tunnels, were the Memegwesi buried with them? The Don, Humber, and Rogue Rivers get all the glory, but Toronto is much more than a three-river town. Before John Graves Simcoe, when the land that would occupy the city was thick with trees and thickets, and its soft soil was traversed by numerous streams and creeks over centuries etched out deep ravines and sculpted rolling dales. As early city builders would find, it's actually quite difficult to completely erase a river, and many of the waterways that once penetrated downtown Toronto still exist, rerouted into underground culverts or underground sewers hidden from the public. Of all the rivers present in early Toronto, Garrison Creek was the biggest and hardest to cross. Its winding course and occasionally deep ravine proved a significant obstacle to the expanding city, and substantial bridges were built at Dundas and Harbord Streets, both of which have been buried but still stand. Garrison Creek started north of St. Clair and headed directly south via Bloor and Christie under a half-buried bridge at Harbord. The stone wall on the north side of the street at Brickford Park is the bridge's parapet. It continued south, causing the weird drips and warped intersection on Crawford Street. From there, Garrison Creek headed through the Trinity Bellwood Park, where there's another buried bridge under Crawford Street. That's actually the dog park as part of the old ravine. And out of the southwest corner, parallel to Niagara Street, where Riverbank caused its distinctive arc, Garrison Creek drained into the Toronto Bay near Bathurst and Fort York Boulevard. Now, I know what you're thinking, Cal Panic. This is a lot of geographical information for you to just
take in,
isn't
it? It's a lot to take in, Bob.
It is, isn't it? All right. I promise we're getting to the spooky stuff. Yeah. We're not a river show. This isn't Bob After Rivers.
Yeah.
But I promise you, we're getting there.
I'm learning a lot.
Garrison Creek got its name because when Toronto was young, it entered Lake Ontario just east of Fort York, the military garrison for the region. It's said that at the time, the mouth of the creek was substantial for mooring a few small boats. The creek had its beginnings 12,000 years ago when the last remnants of the Wisconsin Glacier melted off into the St. Clair Westlands. The glacier had moved to and fro from this area for at least 60,000 years. It had wiped the land clear of forest and left deep deposits of glacial drift, or sand, clay, gravel, and stones, perhaps 200 feet thick. Post-glacial Lake Iroquois, the forerunner of Lake Ontario, washed against a pile of drift and created a steep bluff, the Lake Iroquois Shore Bluff, along with its now Davenport Road. By the early 1900s, settlement had become so dense and the creek so polluted with sewage and refuse sewers became essential for public health reasons. By the mid-1920s, the creek had been completely buried. While Garrison Creek no longer exists, many other creeks and rivers are in the underground city's sewer system. All right, it was important to tell all of you.
Yeah,
that.
We got
to
get background here.
You have to get background. Okay, so what I'm just trying to tell you is, imagine the city needed sewers, but yeah. There's a lot of rivers going on, and I don't know about you, but you're not just going to dam a river and then build a city. You know, it don't work that way. So what they did was, they ran a bunch of tunnels underneath and pretty much covered the rivers where, you know, it meets, and the entire town is built on top of rivers, which is kind of interesting if you think about it.
Yeah.
Are you caught up to speed?
Yeah, I'm catching up here.
And we
got
know,
a map out here.
And we know that the Cretans. Do you really?
No.
Oh, you're.
I should start doing a map.
Folks, 219-845-1100.
Three more.
Yeah, can we get three more calls before the night's over? Can you put this man to work?
Three more.
He's not doing anything.
We break a record tonight.
So anyway, now so I laid that out there. We know that these Mimikwesi creatures existed, at least in the Algonquin tribes and Ojibwe, etc. They exist. That's their belief. Are these little tiny water spirits that look like tiny monkeys? And it is made to believe that if Toronto, you know, as Toronto started settling, they buried these creeks, and they might have been burying these spirits as well. Let's catch you up to
speed.
Okay. So by the 1920s, we had those creeks been buried. We built river. You know, there's tunnels, rivers, etc. The town exists at this point. Let's fast forward to 1978.
Okay.
It was a warm summer's day in August 1978 when a Toronto area man had an experience with a strange creature that would forever change his life. Ernest, he would only allow his first name to be used, was a soft-spoken 51-year-old at the time of his harrowing experience. He and his wife of 19 years had been raising a litter of kittens, and one of the kittens apparently disappeared, and Ernest went and searched the vicinity for Parliament Street apartment. Close by, he stumbled upon the opening to a dark cave and crawled approximately 10 foot inwards. This is where I saw a living creature, a living nightmare creature I'll never forget. And that's a direct quote. Armed with only a flashlight, Ernest encountered a creature of unknown origin. He described the monster as a long and thin, almost like a monkey, 3 feet long, large teeth, weighing by maybe about 30 pounds, with slate gray fur. However, it was the eyes that truly stood out. They were orange and red and slanted. Hmm. Ernest spoke reluctantly with reporters as to what occurred next, and the creature actually spoke to him. "I'll never forget it," he said. It said, go away," in a hissing voice. Then it took off down a long tunnel off to the side. I got out of there as fast as I could, and I was shaking with fear. Ernest never approached the media with his story, and he was afraid to tell people that would think he was drunk or worse, crazy, and felt no one would ever believe him. The Toronto area newspaper, The Sun, found him after hearing about his experience from a reliable contact who worked with the relative of Ernest's, one of a handful of people whom he had confided the experience. He would agree to talk only if his last name was not revealed. "I believe Ernest saw exactly what he said he did," said Barbara, Ernest's wife. "He was terrified, and when he came back to the apartment, he doesn't scare easy. Look, he's been known to have a drink in the past, like most people, and to occasionally tie one on, but he's not a drunk, and he wasn't even drinking that day." The Toronto Sun did question some of Ernest's relatives and neighborhood acquaintances, and they found that they all agreed and supported Barbara's evaluation of her husband. Ernest sounds like a stand-up guy. Ernest, accompanied by Sun staff, returned to the location of his strange sighting in March of 1979. The cave's entrance was located at the bottom of a narrow passageway between the building where he lived and the one next door. Together, they found, unfortunately, the body of the cat, which was half buried in the tunnel. The sad discovery reminded Ernest of the strange noises like an animal in pain, and that he heard emanating from the tunnel prior to his frightening encounter. Ernest showed the Sun reporter exactly where he saw the strange being, and he stated, "The last time I saw a creature, it was heading off into the dark. The passage seemed to drop down very quickly and go a long way back. It was speculated that the tunnel, in fact, led to the sewer system, and this entranceway beside Ernest's apartment was, and I quote, an access point used by the creature to the surface. Safety concerns prompted Toronto's sewer department to thoroughly inspect the tunnel as if it was feared an area child might actually walk into it." Ernest's story was very strange. However, sewage employees did not ridicule or scoff at it, according to a report made by the Toronto Sun at the time. One worker who was quoted in the paper stated, and I quote, "People who work on the surface just don't know what it's like down there. It's a whole different world. Who would have thought a few years ago that people would have actually lived in the sewers, and yet that's exactly what they found in New York a couple of years back." So this would have been, you know, prior to 1978. Another was quoted saying, "I don't know what Ernest saw down there." He also stated, "But I'll tell you one thing. If it could get, if we can get in there, I sure as hell don't want to go down there alone." It is interesting to note that the description of the creature provided by Ernest and an artist rendering, which was included in the original Toronto Sun article, resembles some current reports of another strange creature, the South American Chupacabra.
Chupacabra?
Yes.
It's been a while since we heard about that.
Yeah, exactly. So it's interesting to note that this thing kind of looks like a chupacabra.
Now, chupacabra, correct me if I'm wrong, if we could backtrack a little bit.
Backtrack. Yeah, I got you. No worries.
It's a... Give us a play-by-play. What does this creature look like here? It's a like a rodent's not a bad term, right? It's like a rodent, right? A giant rodent.
A giant rodent.
Yeah, would that be?
It looks like this thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks very much similar to it. The red orange eyes, except this sounded like it's more bipedal. Mm. And I've never heard of a chupacabra sighting where they speak.
No.
This thing spoke English to the guy. I'm assuming English. I know there's a lot of French-speaking Canadians, which so I'm going to assume English unless I'm proved wrong, and I do apologize if I am. But this thing spoke to him and said to get away. You know, that is, and I'm there's a follow-up to the story. I'm going to get to that. I think it's interesting that it told him to run away or go away, and it didn't straight up just attack him. What does that make you lead to think?
It just told him to get away, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like it doesn't want to, maybe no harm? Yeah. Comes a peace?
Do you think it's more scared of him than he was of it?
Or maybe it knows it could take him, but it's a non-threatening creature, maybe, Bob.
The men of Hawaii, the creatures from the Ojibwe tribe, they're known as to being like pretty okay with humans as long as they're respected. Mm. So, I mean, if that's the case of the Mimigwesi, you know, I don't know. That's an interesting take. Mimigwesi, or was it something completely different? Does the Mimigwesi have a relation to the Chupacabra?
Mm. Like they're relatives or ancestors, right?
It's interesting, right? Pardon me. You have the same idea when it comes to like the Yeti and the Sasquatch. Very similar creatures, but different parts of the world.
Arctic.
So is there a possibility that there's a different species of chupacabra that's roaming around North America, and this is the Canadian version of the chupacabra? Mm. The one that can withstand, you know, colder temperatures, because up north it gets cold.
Yeah, no, for sure. Well, Bobby, I mean, there's so many different types of cryptids, you could say, out there, and there's many different varieties, maybe, or variables, or, it could be a bunch of universes out there, Bob, with similar creatures.
Exactly. I don't know. I think the chupacabra thing's too much of a stretch. Mm. I think that if it looks similar, it doesn't mean it is it. And if we, you know, most of the chupacabra sightings were proved to be false, right? We had that discussion during the chupacabra episode.
You know, go back and watch it. It's in podcast form, no matter wherever you listen to podcasts at.
I think you can, if you go back and listen to that episode, you know you find out that most of the sightings are false. But all the sightings of the chupacabra, for the most part, are usually around Mexico, Texas, Florida. There was even some. It's in that warm stretch of land. Mm-hmm. If the creature was said to migrate north, that means that creature was going to have to adapt completely to a whole nother climate. I'm going to assume, and I'm not a biologist, you know, I play one on TV. I'm going to assume that if I take an armadillo out of Texas and I move it to the wilderness of Canada, it's probably not going to survive, right?
Yeah.
Is that a good assumption?
Right. You're probably right about that.
Maybe I'm wrong, right? Maybe there's an armadillo expert out there that's listening to this episode being like, no, you know, Bob, the Arctic armadillo is actually blah, blah, blah. And
I know you can take the armadillo out of Texas, but you can't take the Texas out of the armadillo.
It's not the point. I'm just using that as an example.
All right, I get what you're saying.
But I'm saying, so even if I take this chupacabra creature, right, and I move it up north, is it going to survive in a colder climate? Cryptid or not, unless it's not, you know, I mean, I guess you can say that its biology is not something we've ever studied before, but if it's something relative to what we know, it's a different type of thing then. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's my two cents.
It takes a whole life of its own, basically.
Yes. What do you think? Do you think it's a Mimigwesi? Do you think it's a chupacabra? Do you think the two are related? Where are you standing?
I'm going to say relation, Bob. Who says there? Like I said, there's a whole universe out there full of these creatures. these cryptids. I'm going to say they're related.
Yes.
Case closed.
Okay. Well, we're not done yet.
No, I'm just saying for that, case closed.
Yes. So, real quick, folks, we have. I'm not done with the show yet.
No.
You still have time to call in.
Not by a long shot.
We need three more to go. 219-845-1100. Let's get three more calls before I'm done
here.
Let's
break the
phone lines. Make that man work. We're going to break that man work.
You know how they say break the internet?
Break the internet.
Break the phone lines.
All right. So I found a really interesting story.
What'd you find?
From the Superstitions Times. This was written by Jeff Dupuis, and pardon me if I'm pronouncing that wrong. It's J-E-F-F-D-U-P-U-I-S. This was written in November 26, 2023, so it is a recent story. They're actually following up with the concept of the article, right? So March 25th, 1979, of the Toronto Sun ran the story. And the headline on that newspaper, by the way, was called The Tunnel Monster of Cabbage Town by the then staff writer, now prominent prominent columnist, member of the Canadian News Hall of Fame and Sun editor, Emeritus Lori Goldstein. The half-page article, which amounts to about two columns of a copy, features a photo of the supposed tunnel's entrance and an artist's rendition of the primate-like creature with glowing supernatural eyes. So they actually, like, go back and talk about this story a little bit more, which is really, really interesting. So almost a half, and so this is revisiting the tunnel monster story many years later, okay? Almost a half a century after the story went to print, Lori Goldstein, now an elder statesman of Canadian journalism, acknowledges some surprise in part in the creation of one city's most enduring urban legends. I'm amazed it keeps coming up. 44 years later, Goldstein said, I'm going to stop you right there.
Okay.
I'm going to stop you there. If I wrote an article about a thing living in the sewers that might be a Mimigwesi, and people aren't talking about it 40 years down the line, I don't think I did my job right.
No.
I mean, you look at, like, the Mothman stories, we're still talking about it all these years later. And fill in the blank, Bigfoot, etc. You wrote an interesting article, my man. People are going to remember that. Yeah. And it's a big city like Toronto. You know, it's not like you work in, like, a one-horse town newspaper. No. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So don't be surprised. You should be proud of yourself, and I'm sure he probably is. Goldstein, a cub reporter that had joined The Sun the year prior to the tunnel monster story, had dug up the story himself, hearing about it from a contact of Ernest's. And so this guy is brand new to the concept of reporting. He's like new to the paper. 1 year in, I can't imagine what probably was being written about at that time.
Yeah.
But, you know, you go from the Canadian Toronto bake sale news to
this.
Monster in the sewers. That's quite the change.
Yeah. No, it's a big
thing. Look, man, I'd be excited if I worked in, like, a paranormal, you know, or not a paranormal, if I worked in a newspaper and somebody just came to me and said, here's this paranormal story, do you want to write it? I would jump at that opportunity. But anyway, although the Sun didn't typically cover stories of the cryptozoological or paranormal kind, the story was met with enthusiasm. The editors love it, gave it a front page throw with an artist's depiction of a reported tunnel monster. I got some kidding around the newsroom, but nothing out of line, and no one questioned my credibility in reporting it. To this day, Goldstein had been true to his word, keeping Ernest's full name and other details about him secret. Refusing to divulge any information that wasn't provided in the original piece, Goldstein drove home his conviction that Ernest was reliable. Honest, salt-of-the-earth type. Remember, he didn't want any publicity or money for a story. I contacted him, and he was reluctant to talk. This was not a con man trying to sell me a made-up story for money. It seems unlikely that either Goldstein or Ernest could have understood the longevity of the story would have been in the popular imagination. Residents of a city or region enjoy maintaining and sharing localized urban legend, although the tale of the Cabbage Town Tunnel Monster doesn't seem to have spread too far beyond the city limits, with certain notable expectations. It was the strangest story I've worked on before or since, Goldstein said. Now,
Come on. You didn't take any more paranormal stories after that?
He stopped. It was so
you know,
good.
you look at the story of Linda Godfrey, right? Yeah. Rest her soul. One of the best paranormal investigators of our age and a cryptozoologist at heart. Or, you know, she was the one who put the Wisconsin Beast of Bray Road Dogman on the map. She went from journalist, normal journalist in a, you know, really small city, Elkhorn, Wisconsin, pretty tiny. And she took that story and then made her entire career about the paranormal. And this guy, he's like, I did one, not doing it again.
All you need is one time, man. One and done.
I guess it only takes me one time to do like a real life story. And I'm like, I'm going to change my career completely from a paranormal reporter to like, I don't know, a photojournalist that takes pictures of turtles.
You
I
did
don't
it.
Know.
That was the main thing.
Exactly. After the story ran in the Toronto Sun, Goldstein received lots of positive reader feedback. Good for him. It drew a lot of attention, and even the National Enquirer reached out to Goldstein about it. For him, it was a one and done. He did not pursue it further. Now, when the National Enquirer comes a knocking, you answer that door.
About Bat Boy.
Bat maybe. Boy, man. Anyway, sorry, I don't mean to keep interjecting here. I know people want to get to the story, but I have a lot to say here. And you guys are just stuck listening to me, I guess, because I'm the host. All right. Now for, he did, however, leave the door open for a follow-up, having asked Ernest to stay in touch if he ever saw anything similar. Unfortunately, never contacted him again.
That was it?
That was it. Hmm. Although the story only has one eyewitness, and we don't know what the eyewitness's identity, the story has managed to persist almost for a half a century. Like a snowball rolling downhill, the story has grown larger as other elements seem to attach to it. New facets were added to the legend, some exaggerations of the original details, and others combined indigenous mythology and extraterrestrials. An episode of Animal Planet's Freaky Encounters aired a segment on the Tunnel Monster, complete with snarling animal sound effects, which claim that the Toronto Sewer Department thoroughly inspected the city's entire tunnel system out of fear for what was down there and may go after children. The segment goes on to claim that people and pets have gone missing in and around Toronto's tunnels. Famous local Satanist, I can't believe I had to say that. Famous local Satanist, the Salko Kalfu, by the way, I apologize if I pronounced that wrong, S-A-L-A-K-O-K-A-L-F-O-U, is interviewed and surmises that the creature itself collapsed the tunnel entrance and therefore could tear a person into small pieces. So listen to your local famous Satanist, guys. That person was just like, dude, if that thing broke the entrance to the tunnel, you probably shouldn't go after it.
It's a good warning.
That's a good warning. Yeah. Thank you, famous local Satanist in Toronto. Goldstein's story provides no evidence that the tunnel connects to Toronto's sewer system or a network of underground tunnels. An unnamed city employee stated that it's not probable that the tunnel in question connected to the sewers, theorizing that the poor drainage likely caused erosion underground, hollowing out the narrow passage. Still, Goldstein's piece and subsequent others written about the encounter tie the small story between the apartment buildings to a larger subterranean network. Goldstein's atmospheric opening to his piece sums this up perfectly. There's an eerie city laying beneath the studios of Metro, a city none of us even know about. Ernest has been a visitor to the silent world of the sewers, drain pipes, and ruins under old houses, and the memory of what he saw will haunt him for the rest of his life. Wow. Cryptozoologists have suggested a link of the tunnel mentioned to the story in numerous rivers and creeks in city, diverted and covered over, Garrison Creek and Tattle Creek being two famous examples. The link between the two do not seem to be one that suggests a biological explanation for the creature witnessed by Ernest, but a supernatural one. As often is the case, cryptozoology enthusiasts have sought a precedent for the tunnel monster in indigenous culture and storytelling. Just as Bigfoot sightings were linked to the Salish tales of the wild men of the Pacific Northwest, the tunnel monster has been linked to the Mimic Wasi of Algonquin Algonquin tradition, as we were talking about before. If something in the tunnels did speak to Ernest, it would most likely be a candidate for being a human. Perhaps a child, given its size. Is it a feral child living down there? That's a possibility.
Yeah.
You know, if maybe Ernest, skeptics out there might be like, well, this thing's not real, obviously, Bob, but if we're going to believe his story, then we need to come up with a plausible explanation. Maybe it was a feral child. People live in sewers. That's a real thing that happens. If something in the tunnel did speak... Oh, we're saying that, sorry. Although one shudders to think a small child playing in the tunnels underneath the cities, that is the most reasonable explanation. The East End of Toronto has been an epicenter of urban legends, especially legends about what goes on beneath the streets. Not far from the apartment building where Ernest witnessed the tunnel monster, there are rumors of an underground facility, perhaps an underground base or city in general. The 1990 publication, Underground Alien Bases, written by a man claiming to have been a high-ranking member of U.S. military but only giving his name as Commander X, asserts that there are extraterrestrial bases buried deep underground and that one happens to be beneath the intersection of Jared and Church Street in Toronto. The book describes a small opening of the underground tunnels off Parliament Street in downtown Toronto. Commander X depicts Ernest having accidentally discovered the cave system that networks under Toronto. It is safe to assume that Commander X is borrowing heavily from Goldstein's tunnel monster piece, admitting that the city worker interviewed in Goldstein's piece doubted whether the tunnel was connected to the sewer system. Commander X's contribution to the lore continues, as his book claims that the strange magnetic effects of the magnetic effects have been observed at Garrison Church, a result of strange happenings and the generation of powerful electrical magnetic fields underground. This phenomena, Commander X claims, is responsible for bizarre equipment failures on the surface, leading to disproportionate number of car accidents at that intersection. Recent lists of intersections with the highest rates of accidents did not actually include those streets. Good job, Commander X. Underground Alien Bases is just one book, along titles like The Great Lakes Triangle by Jay Gourley and Gateway into Oblivion by Hugh F. Cochran, that have been helped to cement the idea that the region in and around Lake Ontario is a hotbed for UFO activity and may house a base either beneath the lake or one of the surrounding areas. That UFO sightings have led to the idea of an underground base that and that has been coal sealed with the tunnel monster story is not surprising. Just as some people seek corroboration from folk tales and mythology to explain bizarre sightings, others mix and match sightings of anomalous phenomena using one to collaborate with one another. One might assume that Commander X is drawing conclusions that the tunnel monster was an extraterrestrial biological entity, but his explanation might be considered for further afield. He not only asserts that there is an underground UFO base beneath Lake Ontario and in surrounding areas populated by Greys, if you know what that is, it's the generic alien depiction that a lot of people talk about. But he also claims that Deros exists beneath the city streets. Made famous from the writings of Richard S. Shaver, a Darrow is an evil subterranean creature who seeks torment surface dwellers with advanced technology. Commander X describes a Darrow on the streets of Toronto at 4 o'clock in the morning. One time I encountered one at 4 o'clock in the morning that had no face except for two eye holes and his blank face for a nose-breathing area, but no mouth, Commander X wrote. I hope you like my Commander X
voice. That was good.
Thank you.
You're practicing, I tell.
That's the... Do we have a caller?
No.
Oh, you're... Man, you got me excited!
No, because the computer went to sleep, so I want to make sure it's okay.
All right,
okay,
are we good?
Yeah.
All right, sorry about that. I got excited. 219-845-1100, sure, guys, get on it. The first-hand encounter with a Darrow on the streets of Toronto, for what it's worth, is a more interesting addition to the tunnel monster story than connecting the subterranean nature of the creature to the writings of Richard S. Shaver. Nonetheless, it demonstrates how these stories inevitably cross-pollinate with facets and details from other stories in paranormal literature. But does Commander X suggest that the creature Ernest allegedly encountered was a Darrow? No. He claims that Ernest witnessed, I hope you're ready for this.
Yeah.
Commander X said Ernest saw a sacred Tibetan Kadama, Kadomma, the guardian of the gateways to the city of Shambhala. Mm. You right? You good? That's
I'm
what
good.
Commander X said he saw.
That's great.
If we take everything Ernest recounted as true, there really is no explanation for what he saw. It cannot fit neatly into any rational explanation or even the standard paranormal or cryptozoological forms. The tunnel monster defies any scientific or pseudoscientific, studies. Perhaps that's why it's such an endearing story. The encounter conjures a fairy tale element and that of malformed creature lurking in the dark can speak our language and shies from our gaze. A child hiding, afraid Ernest might give away their hiding spot, seems like the likeliest explanation, assuming that the encounter took place at all and was remotely similar to what was relayed. To disappear deeper so dark of a tunnel does not seem like a child playing a game, but somebody who's hiding from an adult wishing to do them harm. It's just a wild guess, yet far less wild than the water spirit, unknown animal, guardian of Shambhala, or extraterrestrial. The only certainty of this encounter, with whatever it is, has become a permanent part of the city's lore and will likely endure long after Cabbage Town is unrecognizable from Ernest's time. And folks, I just want to give a quick shout out. That's one of the best articles I've ever read on the show. And so this was really cool from the Superstitious Times. I'm going to shoot them an email and say thank you, because that was just a really good, it's a good, yeah. I read it initially and I'm like, that's a good follow-up, right? Because you don't get a chance to really get follow-ups to some of these stories years later. I have a couple points, but I'm curious to see where you stand so far.
Yeah, no, for sure. Well, the whole thing was kind of interesting because he's kind of like, I don't want to say it's so much of a reflection, but it seems like he's really tuned in with what could be beyond there, Bob, if you ask me. Like, it's maybe something that the common folk won't get, actually. Like, he's speaking to the other side, so to speak. Weird. Spooky, if you ask me. What's your theory? Or what's your idea of it all?
Guardian of Shambhala. That's a stretch.
But he's in tune. I'm saying he's in tune.
I'm going with the Mehmet Gwesi theory. Oh. Yeah, those indigenous people knew those lands forever. They were water spirits.
But they were in. But it goes back to them being in tune as well.
Yeah. So I'm going with that concept. I'm sticking with the Mehmet Gwesi. I lost my train of thought, Count. If the story is fabricated, if Ernest never actually existed, if there was never an actual sewer thing going on there and the story was made up, I have a few points. Point one, did this story put the writer on the map? I'm going to assume probably not. You know, I don't know how popular, the story was popular, but did it give the guy more writing?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not a journalist. I mean, I'm a journalist in my regard, but I'm not like writing for newspapers, right?
Yeah, you're not.
If you write something like that, I'm going to assume you're going to keep getting stories about the paranormal and you kind of follow that route, right?
Yeah.
If you go down to current events or something, you get what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
So, yeah. I don't know. I would say if this was a fabricated story, it was not a very good fabricated thing at all. I don't know. I would say that if it was fabricated, I don't know. I wouldn't say it's fabricated. I think he legitimately saw something, and I'm sticking to the Ojibwe creature.
Like I said, in two.
Are you ready to have some words to say goodnight to our audience?
Oh, okay. Well,
that's it. We're good. Story's okay. Over.
Well, but we... 219-845.
No, don't call now. We're going. I'm done. Don't call.
You're done?
We're just getting started. Story's over.
Oh, okay. Story's over.
Are you still here? It's like the ending of Ferris Bueller? Anyway.
Yeah. Well, you could do a fake ending if you want there.
No, I'm good.
Final words here, Bob. Yes. Be careful out there as we continue on through the winter solstice where the veil is thick
winter
right
solstice
now.
Is way past count.
We're in the winter. Oh, that's just, I guess you're right. I call the whole thing the solstice, though. Yeah, I guess it's the whole package there.
You're
but this winter, I don't know what. There's got to be another term for it. Well, you need to get what I'm saying. Everybody have a great week.
Absolutely. Folks, thank you for watching and listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. I appreciate all of you so much. And to Mom, I just want to wish you sweet dreams. And to Dad, wherever you are in the universe, I hope you're happy, comfortable, and doing whatever it is that you want to be doing. And to Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I hope you're having the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. And remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are: not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.